the headlines, the North Korean leader's call for an exponential increase in his country's nuclear arsenal provokes a stern warning from South Korea. Multiple casualties are reported following an explosion outside a military airport in the Afghan capital, Kabul. And people in many parts of the world welcome the advent of the year 2023 with large crowds, fireworks, and light displays. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol says that his country's military should decisively retaliate against what he called Pyongyang's provocations. In a phone call with military chiefs, Yoon said that the army needs mental readiness and practical training for this purpose. He warned that North Korea would continue to conduct nuclear and missile tests on Sunday. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un called for an exponential increase in the country's nuclear arsenal and ordered the development of new nuclear-capable intercontinental ballistic missiles to counter U.S.-led threats. He slammed the constant deployment of U.S. nuclear strike assets in South Korea, saying that Washington and Seoul are trying to isolate and stifle Pyongyang. These remarks came hours after the North fired a short-range ballistic missile off its east coast. Pyongyang conducted an unprecedented number of such tests in 2022. Meanwhile, South Korea will dramatically increase its military spending next year, with hundreds of millions embarked for anti-drone weapons. This after five Korean drones entered the South Korean territory earlier this week. Frank Smith reports.
South Korea plans to significantly boost military spending over the next 5 years, an annual increase of nearly 7%. The Eastern Asian country aims to spend over $440 million on anti-drone weapons alone. The announcement comes only days after North Korea flew drones into the South's territory for the first time in 5 years.
According to South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff, Monday, five North Korean drones crossed the border before breaking formation. Four of them headed to islands in the West Sea, while one of the drones continued south, reaching the skies over the outskirts of this city, the capital, Seoul.
It was the first such incident since 2017, when a drone crossed into South Korea and photographed a U.S. base here. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol, a conservative who came to office in May of this year, has blamed the previous progressive government's policy of engaging Pyongyang for the recent incident.
Given that efforts or military training to respond to such UAV drones have never been properly done since 2017, I think our people must have well seen how dangerous a policy relying on the North's good faith and peace agreements would be.
South Korea plans more joint military exercises with the U.S. for 2023, although much of the public wants talks with North Korea and a de-escalation of tensions.
We need to solve the problem peacefully through discussions between the two Koreas. I strongly disagree with the remarks made by President Yoon Suk-yeol escalating the confrontation, which is really very inappropriate.
State-of-the-art weapons will continue to be developed. It's too dangerous now, so even if it takes some time, I think we should keep trying to talk and do some things together.
Meanwhile, North Korea has unveiled new goals for the country's military. Addressing a large committee meeting of the ruling Workers' Party, leader Kim Jong-un indicated on Wednesday that the country will continue its military development in 2023 after a record year of missile testing. Frank Smith, Seoul.
China has accused the U.S. of misleading public opinion after Washington said that a Chinese fighter jet came dangerously close to an American military plane in regional waters last week. The defense ministry in Beijing said the American aircraft breached international law by flying near China's Paracel Islands. The ministry says that the fighter ignored repeated warnings to leave the area and made dangerous approaches that endangered the safety of the Chinese aircraft. The U.S. military has been conducting maneuvers near the artificial islands Beijing has been constructing in the South China Sea. China claims almost the entire body of water, but parts of it are contested by littoral states such as Vietnam and Malaysia. Canada, Australia, and Morocco have become the latest countries to impose travel restrictions on arrivals from China following a surge in COVID cases there. Morocco is the first country to impose an outright ban on people coming from China, whatever their nationality. More than a dozen other countries, such as the U.S., the U.K., and India, have either already imposed or are considering curbs on travelers from China. The restrictions mainly include a negative COVID-19 test prior to departure. Infections have spread rapidly in China since its relaxation of zero COVID rules last month. The country had kept its borders mostly shut for 3 years and imposed a strict regime of lockdowns and relentless testing. No novel COVID variants have so far been detected in China, and all collected samples continue to be Omicron. Afghanistan is reporting an explosion outside the military airport in the capital, Kabul. The spokesman for the Afghan ministry says the blast caused civilian casualties, but he did not specify the exact number. The cause of the explosion was not immediately clear, and an investigation is underway. The military airport is close to Taliban's Interior Ministry building. In the past few months, Afghanistan has witnessed an increasing number of security incidents, including explosions. Just 3 days ago, several people were injured in the blast that rocked the capital of the northern Takhar province. Abdullah Amirzadeh, our correspondent in Kabul, gave us more details about the incident.
Well, as you might be aware, a rather strong explosion shook the 15th district of Kabul, which is also known as the airport street, this morning. The sirens of ambulances were heard. They were heading to the site. And it is said that the explosion occurred at the gates of military airport, which is a smaller part of Kabul airport. And the Ministry of Interior Affairs of Afghanistan have approved this explosion. They have also said that there are casualties, but they have not yet given any exact number on the number of the dead or wounded. But they have said that there are casualties, and they have not yet clarified whether the casualties are civilians or maybe military forces. And data on the explosion is still limited. We don't know a lot about it. We do not yet know what caused the explosion. The Taliban have not given data on that too. The site is now closed and for further investigations, and no group have claimed the explosion yet.
The Iranian Army's air defense units have warned off several foreign spy aircraft flying near an area of the ongoing exercises in the Persian Gulf. Now, that is according to a statement by the media headquarters of the drills. The development came after a number of manned and unmanned foreign aircraft tried to approach the area of the drills and collect intelligence. In response, the Iranian Army units launched a Qarar drone after issuing radio warnings forcing the intruding aircraft to leave the area. According to the statement, the Iranian air defense radars detected the foreign aircraft at an altitude of 23,000 feet. Qarar drone is a turbojet-powered unmanned combat aircraft capable of delivering payloads comparable to manned aircraft. The Iranian army is staging large-scale exercises in the Sea of Oman and north of the Indian Ocean. The drills are aimed at testing domestically built military equipment and enhancing the country's preparedness against potential threats.
It's the second day of massive naval maneuvers conducted by the Iranian army. Codenamed Zulfaghar, the drill covers over a 3 million square kilometer area, stretching from the Strait of Hormuz all the way to the Sea of Oman and north of the Indian Ocean.
Self-reliance, power, and sustainable security is the slogan of this drill. Here we seek to enhance our military might using our own homegrown armaments. The ultimate objective is to achieve lasting peace and security of our country and our region.
During the second phase of the military exercise, domestically made combat drones, such as Arash and Bavar, flew from the Sahand destroyer to hit mock enemy targets using the homegrown Ghaem smart bombs. Made by Iran's armed forces, Ghaem is a guided bomb with a pinpoint accuracy of less than half a meter. Equipped with an infrared seeker, the precision-guided bomb can engage with fixed and moving targets, both at night and during the day.
Iron bombs, precision-guided missiles, and combat drones are used and will be used in the upcoming phases of the drill. What's important is that all these cutting-edge military equipment are designed and developed by our experts. So the message is that we are now capable of producing a wide array of hardware needed to protect our country.
Iran's military sector has been one of the industries that's been subject to decades-long sanctions imposed by the West. The army says this has prompted Iran to keep its defense industry afloat by drawing on local expertise. Military officials say today Iran produces over 80% of its needed equipment on its own. Military officials here say this drill helps Iran's naval forces to upgrade their preparedness for real-time operations. The ultimate goal, they say, is to ensure peace and stability in regional waters, which they say are constantly exposed to extraterritorial threats. Yusuf Jalali from the location of the drills.
The Iranian Foreign Ministry has organized a specialized forum on the role of the late Commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in combating terrorism. During this meeting, dubbed the Specialized Forum on Fighting Terrorism and Extremism in West Asia, guests and attendees from different Iranian institutions and bodies discuss the fight on terror from different perspectives. Mahdi Abbasian reports.
The Center for Political and International Studies of the Iranian Foreign Ministry has organized a specialized roundtable focusing on the fight against terrorism and extremism in the West Asia region. Guests and attendees from different Iranian institutions and bodies took part in the forum, which concentrated on efforts made by the Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Among the most significant topics discussed during the meeting were fighting terrorism in the West Asia region from the point of view of international law, the role of General Soleimani in fighting terrorism in the West Asia region, and the role of the United Nations in fight on terror in the West Asia region. On the sidelines of the meeting, Iran's former ambassador to Iraq, Iraj Masjidi, highlighted the late commander's role in neutralizing terrorist groups in neighboring countries.
When Lieutenant General Soleimani was assassinated, I was working as the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Iraq. He would frequently travel to Iraq in order to confront the ISIS terrorist group and help the Iraqi armed forces and Hashd al-Sha'bi with planning and logistic support. In other words, he played a prominent role in Iraq in the fight against terrorists.
Masjidi also said that efforts to bring a prosecution against those involved in the assassination of General Soleimani continued. In this regard, the head of a special Iranian committee tasked with pursuing the case of General Soleimani's assassination in domestic and international courts said an indictment on the assassination will be announced soon.
The UN report that described the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani as unlawful and arbitrary has made persecution of this crime easier for us. It clearly holds the U.S. accountable for committing this crime and violating international law. The Foreign Ministry and the Ministry of Justice have also made efforts based on the 1973 Convention, and the results will be announced soon.
He was referring to a report by a UN expert on extrajudicial killings concluding that the targeting of General Soleimani and those accompanying him constitute an arbitrary killing for which the U.S. is responsible.
Iran has had a significant role in the fight against terrorism in the West Asia region, particularly in Iraq and Syria. And Iran's top anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, played a pivotal role in combating terrorism and defeating Daesh. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
The Yemeni health ministry condemns the shelling civilians in border regions as a war crime. The Saudi-led forces have attacked civilians on border areas of Saada governed, killing a number of people, including African immigrants. A human rights NGO, AIN, has urged the formation of an international committee to probe the crimes committed by the Saudi-led alliance against the innocent people of Yemen. The NGO criticizes the international community for turning a blind eye on the war crimes. Since the beginning of a UN-brokered truce in April, a number of people killed in Saudi attacks has amounted to around 3,000. Different areas of the border districts in Saada are subject to Saudi missiles and artillery shelling on a daily basis. The war in Yemen started in 2015 by Saudi Arabia and some of its allies. It has turned into the biggest human catastrophe of the 20th century. And people across the world have been celebrating the arrival of 2023 with fireworks and other festivities. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
Imam Khomeini's viewpoint on condition of leadership. The person who governs should have a wide knowledge of law as it is referred to in traditions. The Islamic government is a government of law and not a government of desires or a dictatorship. If the leader is not acquainted with law, he will not be competent to govern people, because if he follows another person in taqlid, imitation, that will weaken his power. And if he does not, he cannot put the Islamic law into effect. The tradition that the Islamic jurists rule over the kings, al-fuqaha hukam al-salatin, is undisputed.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the mosque. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini has said that I must declare today that preservation of the mosques is incumbent on all the Muslims. Now, in this part of his speech, obviously, he's talking about the importance of the mosque and its preservation. Why we must preserve the mosque is because mosque is the house of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That's the first thing which we know, that the mosque is known as the house of Allah. And the second thing is, it's the place, a pure place, where people enter with the purification. Number three, it helps us to reach the perfection. And when we are in the mosque, when we go to the mosque, preserving the mosques means that those who are living around the mosque, they must attend the 5 times daily prayers in the mosque so that they see each other, at least the Muslims in that area, in that town. They see each other, they meet each other, they help each other when they're in the mosque. They get to know about each other.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala.
Obviously, in Islam, we know that Islam gives importance to the neighborhood, and the neighbors should look after each other. Therefore, when we enter the mosque, when we see people, when we talk to them, when we see our neighbors, we know what's happening, what is going on. But if we do not attend the mosque and we are living a life that is being given by a secular system, the way we see in the West today, that how we are living in the West, is that we don't know about our neighbors, who are they? Maybe if we know who's living the next door, we don't know who's living across the street on the other side. So it is better to be in a place where we get to know each other. And one of the reasons why Islam is giving importance to the mosque, and Imam Khomeini is also saying that the preservation of mosque is very important, is because when you go to the mosque, you get to know each other. You know about each other. You help each other. We can help people the way we desire. Obviously, sometimes we desire that may Allah, like may we know someone who we can help. And the best place is the mosque, where we can see a believer coming, being the servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And obviously, on top of that, we also declare to be the servants of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Therefore, it is the time to help each other, to support each other, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
La ilaha illa. Aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part of the program, we followed Javad, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the south of Iran and saw the most amazing combination nature could match together, the desert and the sea. We also met the region's native inhabitants and got acquainted with their unique lifestyle. Stay with us as Javad travels to other villages of the region to discover the culture and customs of the people.
In the past, the staple grains for all of Iran came from Sistan and Balochistan. But what for severe drought spells and misguided planning over the years, the province has completely lost that status. But today, in some areas of this province, and in the Bahu Kalat district in particular, all kinds of vegetables and tropical fruits are cultivated. There is a mango tree that's in full bloom, exploding with blossoms. In about 5 months, they will turn into delicious, juicy mangoes. This is heaven indeed. Walking around in the palm groves and other gardens in Bahu Kalat gives me a lot of peace. One of the most beautiful things I come across during my stroll is the Baluchi squirrel. The Baluchi squirrel, also known as the stripy or palm squirrel, is a unique species of rodents living in parts of Iran, Pakistan, India, Nepal, and Bangladesh. The most distinctive feature of this mammal is the dark stripes on a white background on its back. In the past, the inhabitants of Sistan and Balochistan believed these stripes were the fingerprints of the gods. A typical Baluchi squirrel is between 13 and 15 centimeters from its head to the end of its rump, and its tail adds an additional 14 to 19 centimeters to its total length. It's quite refreshing to see Baluchi children playing and gallivanting around in the banana groves. Beautiful, pure souls, the product of their serene, peaceful surroundings. Children of Shir Gwaz spend the whole week waiting to go to the fruit groves near the village to expend some of their inexhaustible energy. What they also do is they cook their traditional food on their own, and just like their elders, they gather around, sing, and play. The kids here have distinctive, innocent faces. They are just gorgeous. And they're all wearing their traditional costumes, boys and girls alike. All wearing traditional clothes. They are among the oldest, most original tribes in Iran. They're very noble and very patient. They are a people with a lot of patience. And although some of them don't have good living conditions, they are very patient folks. They're so content. The Baluchi culture is the perfect example of a culture of nobility and peace. And those cultural traits are readily visible in the architecture of the old houses in this village. The architectural design is endemic to Balochistan. You can't see anything like this anywhere else in Iran. There are also new houses in these areas with designs influenced by Indian and Pakistani cultures and architectures. One of the characteristics of Baluch families is their large populations. Wherever in the village I go, I'm surrounded by many of the little angels offering a breath of fresh air after a long day of hard work. They fill my heart with peace and joy. Perhaps one of the reasons these kids are so happy is their beautiful, tranquil, natural environments. Just as influential is the beautiful, happy colors used in the clothes that these little girls have on. Clothes that are embroidered by the artistic hands of their mothers. Hand embroidery on colorful clothes and fabric is among the most important crafts of Baluchi women. And fortunately, Baluchi women have been able to preserve this exquisite art, a skill handed down through generations. It's noontime. It can get really hot in Shirguaz, even in the middle of winter. But the boys of the village have a good solution to fighting the scorching heat. What they do at a time like this is jump into the waters of Shirguaz River and swim to their heart's content. These children usually play together in groups. The day offers an opportunity for me to make a return to the beautiful carefree days of my own childhood. Live life as an uninhibited, unabashed explorer of the unknown. Playing with these children serves as an outlet for the negative energy in me. Although the children in Shirguaz don't have much to entertain themselves with, they're all growing up happy, healthy, and strong by playing in groups and making the best of what their natural environment provides them with. No computers to spend the whole day on, playing virtual computer games that don't involve any physical activity, video games that have taken the place of playing outside for many kids today, outdoor experiences in nature, and plenty of physical activity that a growing body craves. These children's only toy is nature, going up trees, diving into the river and swimming, playing with animals, singing songs and helping their parents at home and on the farm, frolicking around and playing with stones and pebbles. This non-stop joyful mobility is the reason behind these children's physical health and happy disposition. Soon, I leave the village and set out for my next destination. I have to travel 250 kilometers to the west of Baluchistan, to a place 80 kilometers north of the city of Nikshahr, a name that reminds me of my country's beautiful north. Given its unique geographical location, Baluchistan has a diverse and strange climate. Some parts of this area is affected by the tropical climate of India, in the south by the Sea of Oman, in the west by the Jazmurian inland basin, and in the north by Lut Desert. Surrounded by these different climatic conditions, Baluchistan features diverse lifestyles and various plant and animal species. Baluchistan is a dry, water-thirsty land. The average annual rainfall in the province is around 110 millimeters. But the important thing is, all that water comes down in only a couple of torrential rainfalls that cause the rivers in the province to overflow their banks. The ensuing flooding leaves behind a trail of destruction every time. The people here tell me they get snow and blizzards in some winters too, because of the mountains in the Gorgan area. Perhaps you'll find it interesting to know there is a place named Gorgan in Sistan and Balochistan province. But no, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the city of Gorgan in the north of Iran. This area is comprised of around 11 villages punctuating this mountainous area. It can get freezing cold here. The people of Balochistan say, except for Mount Taftan and Mount Basman, the only other place where you can see snow in the highlands is the same Gorgan region in Balochistan. It can get really cold here. Because of the altitude and the relatively good rainfall here, this valley usually has a good amount of water. And abundant water means life and prosperity. The people of Gorgan are either farmers or orchard owners or livestock keepers. The most important thing for them to be able to do any of those things is to have clean drinking water. The people of the first village I visit are very kind and hospitable. In my conversations with them, I realize all the young people in the village are busy working simply because there is enough water. Everyone has something to do. They're all grateful to God for all their blessings. Their biggest asset is contentment. I could say most of the things I've seen in this village were built from scratch by the men and women living here. They're all content with what they have. They even have electricity. They live a beautiful, simple, and healthy life, away from the hustle and bustle of city life and excesses that distract human beings from their true self and from nature. The Baluch community leads a simple lifestyle in their simple homes in Balochistan. They don't even expect a paved road. The peace that these lovely people exude is a breath of fresh air against the vicissitudes of city life. I am so at peace when I am in their fold. Before long, I resume my journey and arrive in the village of Archenik, a bucolic settlement second to none. But it isn't the architecture and natural environment that lends Archenik its beauty. The most beautiful thing I come across is the hospitality of the local inhabitants. Archenikis are hard-working, hospitable people. Moments after I reach the village, one of the elders comes to welcome me and invite me to his beautiful house. And the family gives me the red carpet treatment. Personally, I have a lot of respect for the culture and customs of this lovely ancient tribe and have tried my best not to have a negative impact on the culture or any of the good social norms of this community. Instead, I learned from them things that I had no idea about before I met them. I've had many trips to far and exotic places in Iran. And on those trips, I saw many and varied village houses and nomad tents. But nothing like the teeps in the Gorgan region. Beautiful, modest homes that offer peace and tranquility, just like their natural surroundings. Village elder Pir Muhammad fills me in on how they build their houses. My trip is nearing its end. That means I have to leave the beautiful Sistan and Balochistan province and head back home. I leave with a bag of experience and memories as sweet as the dates of Gorgan. And I do so knowing that I haven't done any harm to the natural environment and the culture of this ancient tribe.
Well, I'm quite sure that this week's documentary about Iran's natural wonders intrigued all our audience across the globe. And I hope it inspires you to come and explore the hidden treasures of Iran. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us. And until next week, goodbye.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is
this
for
is,
a better life.
For a better life.
Farmud boristu لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is For a Better Life for IRIB English Radio. I am Sayyid Mahdi Tabakkol, and one of my specialties is in enhancing the style for living. And my talk is based on the Quran and Islamic tradition. In this episode of the program, I am going to be going over trusting God in difficulties. Difficulty is an inseparable part of our life. Hardship is a part of our daily life, and we cannot keep them away from ourselves. There is not even one person who is 100% free from the hardship of this world. Now, what is the solution? Can we let these problems take our patience away? Can we run out of hope and tranquility? Of course not. When we believe that Allah is there, it should be enough for us. Then we have to trust Him. We need to realize that even the slightest thing in this world would never take place without the permission of Allah. Without the permission of God, even one leaf does not fall from the tree. No one and nothing can move, and no good nor bad action would take place. This is a fact. Imam Sajjad, or fourth Imam, when he faces a hardship, says to Allah in one of his supplication, وَبِقُدْرَتِكَ أَوْلَدْتَهُ عَلَيَّ O Allah, if I am stuck in this difficulty, you with your power decided to direct it to me. وَبِسُلْطَانِكَ وَجَّهْتَهُ إِلَيَّ And with your mastery over everything, you allowed it to come to me. Then the Imam continues, وَلَا فَاتَحَ لِمَا أَغْلَقْتَ وَلَا مُغْلِقَ لِمَا فَتَحْتَ No one can open what you has closed, and none can close what you has opened. وَلَا مُيَسَّرَ لِمَا عَسَّرْتَ No one can make easy what you have made difficult. These are the facts. I recommend everyone to read the entire of this supplication, which is full of many monotheistic points. And the Imam accentuates on the fact that everything in this world is in the hands of Allah. If we have faced a severe difficulty, this difficulty did not come upon us without Allah's permission. Now let's have a glance over some verses of the Quran. We read in the story of the Israelites at the time of the Prophet Moses, when they escaped from the Pharaohs, or Pharaoh and his army, under the leadership of Moses, it was night. Pharaoh and his army learned about the escape of the Israelites and started chasing them. The Israelites suddenly reached the Nile River. It was really predicament since they could not move forward because in front of them was water, and they could not run away to another place because the Pharaoh and his companions would reach them sooner or later. The hardest difficulty that could be ever met. When the Pharaoh and his army approached them, got near them, we read in the Quran, فَلَمَّا تَرَى الْجَمْعَانِ قَالَ أَصْحَابُ مُوسَىٰ إِنَّا لَمُدْرَكُونَ When the two hosts sighted each other, the companions of Moses said, Indeed, we are overtaken. We have been caught up. Now let's have a short break. I will be come back and continue talking about this story.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back to the program for a better life. We were talking about the Israelites at the time of Moses when they escaped and the Pharaoh reached them. They said, we have been caught up. But Moses, who had a complete trust in Allah, told them, Kalla inna ma'i rabbi sayahdeen. By no means, not at all. Verily my creator, Allah is with me. He will guide me. He will tell me what to do. Then we read in the following verses that Allah told Moses to strike the sea with his stick. So the sea was divided into two parts and the Israelites passed through it. Let me focus on this point, that the verses of the Quran and these verses indicate that God can offer a solution for us even in the most severe problems. The verses of the Quran are not only stories and storytelling, but also are for learning and understanding. As a result, we can also in difficulty should say, "Inna ma'i Rabbi sayahdeen." Allah is indeed with us and never leaves us alone. Allah will show us the right path and the way of solution. Another example of trusting Allah in hardship is seen in the final part of Imam Hussein's life in Karbala, before he get murdered. Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, in his final talk to Allah, and that moment when he was on the verge of martyrdom, and knew that as soon as he was martyred, the enemy would attack his household, the women of his family, and those who were with him, of women and kids in Karbala. The enemy would attack his children, would take them captive. At that time, when Imam Hussein's companions, friends, and his men and relatives were murdered, at a time when his thirst had reached its peak, no, just imagine the situation, he addresses Allah with the words that shows his utmost patience and submission to Allah. Says, "Sabran ala qadaika ya Rab, I am patient to what you have decreed, O my Creator. La ilaha siwak, there is no God but you. Ya ghiyath al-mustaghithin, O the only assistant for those who need help. Ma li rabbun siwak, there is no other owner, no other supervisor for me but you." The word Rab, which is one of the attributes of Allah, means the observant owner, a caring supervisor. Supervisor of the universe. Here, when the Imam addresses Allah by this word, he wants to say that I know that all of these difficulties that I am facing is not out of your control. Here, the Imam considers Allah the owner and trainer, someone who is well aware of what is happening to his servant and what is good for him to happen, what is best for him, for his servant to face. Now, all the difficulties of Imam Hussein passed, but his name and his goal are widespread. His divine reward is high and his bilad has never been wasted. The conclusion is that we in difficulty have to trust Allah, have to be submissive to his decision. We should trust him, and we need to realize that what Allah decides is always in our favor, whether we realize the wisdom behind it or not. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash. I share, he knows. Allah knows.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.